AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.
This is AutoLine After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode 79 for Thursday, November 11th, 2010. Better than being on a cruise ship.
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, 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 you come to the right place, the hottest automotive show on the internet every Thursday night. And I'm Peter DiLorenzo, in case you forgot or didn't want to remember. And tonight I'm joined by Mr. Jim Hall from 2953 Analytics, Mr. Scott Burgess from the Detroit News, and Mr. Frank Marcus from Motor Trend. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing tonight?
I'm awesome. Good.
Good. Good, good. You know what? Let's talk about Chrysler. Here we have the company. We've got the Uber dork, Sergio Marchionne, leading the charge, and he's insisted from day one that they are going to succeed, they are going to win, and they are going to show us all that they're smarter than the average bear. Frank, what do you think about that?
So far, I'm willing to be persuaded. This looks a lot more like a merger of equals than that last Chrysler tie-up by far. Everybody I know there is pretty enthused about where they're going with things and the collaborative spirit. It's like two bumbling drunks in the dark found each other and go, oh, you know, neither one was like the overlord or the superior. And they're going forward. Unfortunately, some of these things are going to take a little while to roll out. So we're not going to see the Fiat-y stuff for a little while yet. But the stuff that was still in the pipeline and which somehow they kept developing through the dark days last year is coming out, and some of it looks, you know, pretty decent.
Some of it was turned on and turned off. It has been tweaked yet again with Fiat guidance. So it's not, we're not seeing the core stuff that used to be back.
What do you think, Scott?
I think that the it was really frustrating for a while because you couldn't find out anything. And there was 6-8 months almost where it was just dead silent. They had that giant meeting last November. We're going to do this and this and this. And then you didn't hear word one from them. There was a lot of relief, I think, when the Grand Cherokee came out, because that's a really nice vehicle. And if you look in October, Grand Cherokee sold around 21,000 units. It has outsold the FJ Cruiser for the year just in October. And that's a really good sign. People are receptive to good vehicles, and that car is, and it looks like the Pentastar is going to be good, and good for them.
Well, I think we knew the Grand Cherokee was going to be good.
Yeah.
Grand Cherokee had to be good.
Right.
I think we need to, there has to be some reservations about the 500, because now we're what, 6-7 years into the premium smaller car in the U.S. with many.
Scion, you could say, was in there, too.
Scion. But, I don't think it's... Sure, the first in the block people are going to sign up for the 500. Mm-hmm. But how long is that going to last? And then, you know, I think they're going to have harder time with the 500 than they think.
I just am not going to say that, though, because I said the same thing about the Mini. I thought, nobody remembers the original Mini, and that thing is going to be too small, and nobody wants to be, you know...
I'm not saying it's too small. I'm just saying that we might have reached a point where...
Maybe.
I don't think the 500... is a smart car.
No, it isn't.
And the couple of versions that I've driven are actually not bad cars to drive around.
Don't get me wrong. I love the 500.
Yeah, I think it's
especially love the 500 in the context of driving around in Paris.
Well, yeah.
So I just wondered, after the first in the black frenzy.
I think it has legs. I'll tell you why. It's a car that has sort of the fashion and the funkiness of a Mini, a modern Mini. But it's a more friendly car. It's more comfortable, easier to get in and out of. The rear seat's more serviceable. It's a more refined vehicle.
You think it's not bigger than in the back seat?
No, it's tall. The seating position's higher. The door aperture's taller. It's actually physically. I've had them both in my driveway at the same time. And it's easier to get in and out of the back seat of a Cinquecento than it is a Mini. Yeah, I mean, we're not talking a countryman here.
It's like, what, 9 inches shorter? It's a large amount shorter.
Well, the European model. The U.S. car has bumpers added to it, you may have noticed. Yeah, but the thing is, you sit up taller in it. And that, as a result, the couple is far better than the Mini. Because the Mini, you're on the floor. Yeah. You sit in the back seat of a Mini, and your knees are in your chin. So the package is more friendly. The car's more refined. It isn't the same kind of, I mean, a Mini, even a base Mini, you get in it, and it's sort of go-kart fun. The Cinquecento isn't that. But it's a different kind of sort of car that captures that for somebody who isn't maybe a nuts driver.
Yeah, I think the bottom line, though, is that's not going to be the way Chrysler goes. If they can sell the 200, they need to sell the 200. That needs to be accepted as a mainstream.
They need to sell it to consumers, not rental fleets.
Right.
They need to sell enough of them to prepare people to be impressed with the replacement.
Yeah, it's a short cycle car.
Yeah,
and it's a very short life cycle.
Yeah, and it's good.
It is good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because the greenhouse hasn't changed,
which is the biggest part of the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't
I don't think there was a single biggest part of the problem. The biggest part of the problem with the Sebring was the Sebring.
The whole car.
The car was awful in every way.
The greenhouse was horrible, and they're saying, oh, the interior's great, and everything. Yeah, but it's still the same car. And, yeah, they got front and rear clips on it. It's good it's short cycle car because, man, it's just not happening. Yeah. It's not a problem.
But they needed something as a bridge.
And the dynamic changes. I haven't driven a 200, but, you know, the Avenger, you know, got a lot of, I'm sure, similar tweaks. They're tuning them separately now. They're trying to make Chryslers feel like Chryslers and Dodges feel like Dodges. So it'll be different. But if they did as much to the 200 as they did to the Avenger, it might go down the road a little better than the Sebring.
Speaking
and it's got that Pentastar, which is fabulous.
Yeah, speaking of which, what have you driven lately that you've liked, Frank?
You know, it's been kind of a quiet week. I just got out of a Cherokee yesterday, and I'm in a power
hardtop.
Yeah, Grand Cherokee, yes. I'm in a little Miata power hardtop thing, which is amazing. Came home from a weekend trip for two. I got all of our luggage in the trunk. Room, of course, the top can still go down. That thing is kind of impressive. Mm-hmm. It's not new,
but it's getting expensive.
Yeah.
What about you, Scott? What have you driven lately?
Just gave back the Sportage, and I was pretty impressed with it. I thought the price got a little high. It was getting up to, I think it was $28,000, the model I was driving. But I thought the exterior is really sharp.
And the interior and exterior, styling-wise, they've got it going on.
The performance of the engine is a little lagging. You know, it just...
Yeah, that four-cylinder one?
Yeah.
And I guess I had it right before you.
Missing a gear in the trans.
That's going to be interesting how they grow Kia with Hyundai. I mean, will the differentiation really be there and stick, and directional philosophy, will it be there?
Visually, the differentiation is there. And if anybody doubts, look at a Sonata and look at the Optima. I mean, it's a radically different approach from a design standpoint.
Well, what continues to baffle me, though, is, you know, we've got Hyundai that's got Equuses and Genesises in the plan here.
Right.
And all the back-to-back ones that share architecture down here, the Kias seem to be more expensive than the Hyundais. I don't know why that is. And they look at, I mean, they actually seem like value, but like, why are you positioning the low models higher on the Kia? You know, you'd think that the Hyundai wanted to be the Luxo smooth, creamy, and maybe the Kia be the sporty, you know.
Kia needs some products. I mean, we talked about the Miata, and one of the Miata's problems is its price has creeped up to where it is not as affordable as it once was. There's a space that's opened up there for somebody to do sort of a take on a postmodern Miata. And Kia is a logical company to do it. The problem is, if they do that, then does immediately Hyundai come and siphon one off? Because that's what happened originally with the minivan. Remember, the minivan was a Kia only. When they went to the current generation product, all of a sudden there's the Hyundai variant, the Entourage. Now it's gone, and there's no 10, there's no 11. So it looks like they're trying to stratify out the lines.
Well, good luck with that, because they're going to need to really differentiate directionally and everything. Have you guys driven the Juke yet, Nissan Juke?
It's the most fun small car Nissan makes.
You know, if only it didn't have a CVT.
We have Autoline has one here. Ben has been in it, and he really likes it. I like it. I haven't driven it yet. I want to drive it soon. Have you driven it?
I haven't driven it. I was looking at it actually outside. And
there's
some really cool design elements on it, the way those headlights are on top of the...
Those aren't the headlights.
The headlights are below, but the funky lights that look on the top.
The headlights are below.
But yeah. The torque vectoring rear axle is dynamite. Mm-hmm. And some of the neat stuff, they've got a little driver information center down here, and it's the first application that I've seen. It may have been something in JDM that I haven't seen, but where you push a button and all the buttons change their logo. They do something different. And the writing on the buttons, which is lit from behind, comes out and it's different. It's all the buttons still say what they do, but they all do just something different. That's cool.
Well, hopefully when I get one, it'll have the manual, because I just like CVT.
And it's, you know, the CVT is pushing on a rope because customer satisfaction isn't there. I mean, it's telling, I think, that there's the commitment to CVTs for Nissan products, but they do not use a CVT in an Infiniti. They don't touch them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a car.
You know, the engineer in me likes them. I like the fact that they put the engine at its optimal torque point for, you know, max brake specific fuel consumption and so forth. Although half of these things end up giving you then paddle shifters, you know, which actually are fun if you're going to drive down a, you know, twisty road.
They can be entertaining.
They're great.
But I can't believe it where there are some CVTs that are behind a torque converter.
Yeah.
You know, so all the efficiency that you get from the CVT, you've basically taken a big chunk of it and thrown it right out the window.
Yeah.
So the absurdity of the CVT is it's an engineer's solution that doesn't take into account the way people interact with their cars, plain and simply. If you were building cars for the first time and you didn't have manuals or basically planetary automatics, a CVT is probably a sensible way to go.
As GM attempted in their first swing at the automatic.
Yeah. But the Juke's one of those cars from the B-pillar forward, I think it's pretty interesting. And dynamically, it's with a manual, it's pretty good. But the rear of it, I'm sorry, I just cannot get behind it.
Well, and then Nissan does this just idiotic print ad where they array all their models facing the camera, except for the Cube. I like the Cube, so I'm not going to knock that. But all the models facing the camera are the ugliest lineup of cars on the planet. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I mean, talk about... I get to put your best foot forward, I mean, but it's just unbelievable. It was just so bad. I'm just like, really?
When you look at it, what's interesting is that there is no standardization or Nissan face or an attempt to do it, to put some sort of a familial look to it so you go, oh, that's a Nissan. They're just doing it with a hamburger and nothing else.
Yeah, and that doesn't work. I mean, look what Cadillac did with Cadillac Design when they were nowhere. They were just running on fumes and Vogue white walls and vinyl roofs. And they just said, you know, we're just going for it. And they put that face on, and there's a lot of hand-wringing. I remember it being at Detroit Auto Show where they unveiled the Evoque concept, and everyone was, oh, man, you know, that's pretty dramatic, radical. And then here we are, and, you know, they have a face. And, you know, that's what Lincoln's trying to do with their waterfall grill. And, you know, if they stick with it, I think they will succeed because they have a presence on the road. And ironically, the best presence coming at you on the road is the MKT, which everybody doesn't like.
See, and I
happen to like.
I'll beg to disagree, because to me it's a classic example of they didn't know when to lift the pen. In other words, I understand the waterfall grill, but it just keeps going on and on and on and on and on.
The MKX, the new MKX, I think it looks perfect.
But there's a point at which you do it, because as you get those vertical elements taller and taller and taller, you're actually making the car look visually narrower, and that's what you don't want a luxury car to do. I love the graphic, the idea of making the lamp part of the form. And if you remember, when Horbury originally showed this, they showed how they weren't locked into a grill texture with it. You could fill this any one of a number of ways, and from a distance, everybody knew. Lincoln, 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 Lincoln.
But they locked that right away.
They locked the grill texture in. So the idea of using this to make it a graphic, because if you think about it, a lot of grills are about the graphic. How they fill the two kidneys on a BMW is academic.
I think they'll succeed with Lincoln in that look. I really do. I guess because I've seen the stuff that's coming.
Yeah, but I'm saying they need to use it for where it accentuates what they want the cars to be from a present standpoint. Yeah. The MKT is one of those things. A friend did a sketch of an MKT where he basically hacked about this much of the lower grill off and just did a dark inset so you still were getting air down there, and it makes the car look appreciably wider. I mean, it's amazing just hacking off about, 2.5-3 inches vertical of those grills.
Yeah. Let's shift gears here. Speaking of the Japanese car companies, they're getting their asses handed to them in China, kind of. Do you think that we've seen the eclipse of the Japanese car companies and then the rise of the Koreans? Are we there yet?
You know, I read some of those sales results, too, and I kind of wondered, you know, I know a lot of older Jewish people in this country that wouldn't dream of owning a German car. And I wonder if there's a generation of Chinese that still remember how nasty the Japanese were to them.
Well, that is.
And if there's a little of that going in there, I don't know. It's a lot of young people probably fueling most of the buying over there. But I don't know.
One of the problems, you have to look at this, your strength in China, to no small degree, is a function of who you teamed up with.
Right.
Because they're JVs. And you look at who Honda teamed up with, and it's like, well, they didn't make the best move on that one. Toyota is split. Toyota's got stuff with FAW. They have they're dealing with multiple companies, just like Volkswagen is. For Volkswagen, that's probably Volkswagen's little secret card that they might be able to play, because they're sold through two different dealer chains. There's an FAW Volkswagen dealer chain. There's also a, who's the second one? Is it BAIC or SAIC? Anyway, but they're two chains that are selling the vehicles. So you get in a situation where that can help you. And some of the Japanese partnerships were not done with the manufacturers you really wanted to partner with. And that's one of the reasons that's happening.
I still think there's going to be a point where the Chinese government says, ding, ding, ding. Thank you very much. Bye-bye now. Thanks for the intellectual property. We really liked all your input and friendship.
Good stuff.
See ya.
I wrote something for a German publication about 8 or 9 years ago where I said, look, if you're strategic about this, yes, China's a good deal. India, English rule of law. It's the same situation. They still demand joint ventures. They demand major partnerships in joint ventures for the same reasons. You know, when they were colonies, they were kind of not treated very well. And the only issue is that the Chinese put the infrastructure development in. I mean, the Chinese highway building is huge. The Indians haven't done it yet, but they're going to do it.
There was an interesting show last night on CNBC about Ford, and they spent a lot of time in India.
Mm-hmm. And Ford's been more successful in India than it has in China.
And I think that's going to be a smart play on
I agree. Part. Well, you saw that the memo of understanding between SAIC and General Motors. And everybody says, well, that's because SAIC wants to buy some of General Motors. Actually, no, it's to bump start an Indian operation because SAIC is way behind the curve in India, and so is GM.
Yeah.
And the percent growth numbers that are going to come out of India for the next decade are going to make the growth numbers of China at the same time look very small by comparison.
Well, the number of cars is probably not going to be anywhere near.
No. Yeah. But it's about getting in the growth, getting yourself seated. Because, I mean, remember, the middle class, as defined by our measure of middle class in China, or I'm sorry, in India, is 300 million people, population of the U.S.
Yeah, well, you know, this China thing, they're clamping down on precious metals, sending everyone scrambling. It's going to be a turmoil-based.
There's nothing I love more than talking to a serious, hardcore electric vehicle guy about how we've got to have electric vehicles so we stop our wars over oil. It's totally wrong. The geopolitical reason's enough. And I said, great.
I guess
so
what?
In 50 years, we'll have war over lanthanides, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, come on.
Well, there's another interesting development. I think we should get it here, but there's no plans to. How about the Mercedes-Benz S-Class, Scott, with the four-cylinder twin-turbo diesel? And do you think four-cylinder luxury cars really have a place? Of course, we've got that. We've got Aston Martin doing their version of the IQ.
But you must already own a real Aston Martin to be eligible to buy one.
You can't buy one if you don't own an Aston.
Yeah.
I thought that they said that they were going to sell.
And I'm not sure you could go pick up a cheap V8 either.
I thought I just read.
It's a window of time.
I thought I just read where they were going to sell it beyond if you don't have an Aston. I thought I just read that. I might have misread that.
I didn't.
What do you
that.
Think, Scott?
I think eventually we will see four-cylinder luxury cars. It's just a matter of time when the engines can produce the power that big luxury customer wants, but
and the refinement. That's the issue.
Absolutely. It's one where it's inevitable. You know, the V8s are going to be specialty engines pretty soon. I mean,
well, in Europe they already are.
Right.
The truth is, those cars in Europe are six-cylinder diesels, and they are great cars with six-cylinder diesels. I mean, the Audi A8 with the six-cylinder diesel is an amazing automobile.
Well, when I looked at the specs of this new S-Class, for most people, that's all they're going to need. If you're right, if
it's
the refinement thing.
You got to know that they're going to be keeping a real close eye on that EcoBoost Explorer, seeing how many people pop extra for that baby.
Yep. And it's also in the Edge as a premium
engine. The Explorer is a fine vehicle, by the way. People have no idea that thing is going to be a shocker.
Mm-hmm. Did you drive the EcoBoost?
Yeah. Explorer is a fine vehicle.
Yep.
Unexpectedly good. Maybe not unexpectedly, but really good.
Ford is learning how to work their platforms, though. They really are. They know the strengths and the weaknesses now of that platform, because that's basically the 500 Freestyle, yeah. And they understand where it's really good and where it's not, and how you can actually make up for the bad by enhancing some of the good. And they know that platform up one side and down the other. That's probably going to prove to be a very difficult platform for them to evolve or to change next go around because of that.
Well, no, they're going to do a new one.
To your point, the other thing that I think we're really going to see over the next couple of years, and we're already seeing it, is are people willing to pay more for the smaller engine? Because the premium engine in Edge is going to be the 2-liter EcoBoost.
Right.
Explorer, 2-liter. Those were 4 cylinders. Standard is a 6.
Well, the same on the F-150.
F-150?
The EcoBoost 6 is actually priced above the Coyote. The Coyote's a great engine.
The Equinox was the smaller engine with the 2.8. Regal is this.
We're going to get there no matter what.
But if nobody buys them, then they're going to have to go back and reevaluate how to do that.
This new S-Class is 7,500 euros under the cheapest S-Class, but it's still a bunch more than an E-Class.
Right. Let's see. The thing with the 4-cylinders, it's going to be refinement. And the thing is, if they position it at a lower price, remember, they're being done for CO2. Right. This, in Europe, this is being done for CO2 management, basically, so their fleet's good. And if they work from a dynamic standpoint, my concern is that the 4-cylinder S-Class is going to end up in the equivalent of the sort of Lincoln Town Car livery service in Germany. That's my concern.
Well, I'm just talking about if they bring it here.
The diesel, that's going to be tough
to imagine.
And it's a diesel, which is tough. Yeah. Diesels ain't easy, and they get harder as time goes on.
Although small ones are easier than big ones.
From an after-treatment standpoint,
yep.
Yeah. But
from the C-Max with that 2-liter diesel, mm-hmm. Man, that's a nice engine.
I'll tell you, that C-Max is going to be very strong, I think, in this market.
Well, it's the Mazda 5, but it has marketing behind it. It's better developed. I mean, it's one of those things. The car's been out there. The Mazda 5, iconically, is what the car is.
I love the Mazda 5.
It's a very good vehicle.
But the C-Max, to me, is just the next level.
Yeah, it's a little longer,
and
too.
I wouldn't be surprised to see the Focus C-Max either. When it first comes out, attaching a Focus name right to it, they had done that with the original one.
Oh, I expect. And, yeah, that's what they'll do. They won't just say
it won't
C-Max.
Be C-Max.
It'll be Focus.
Yeah, C-Max. For one thing, they can add it towards the total and say, look, it's the giant selling.
We sold 8 million Focus.
Well, it's like when they used to do a Cutlass Sierra, a Cutlass Calais, a Cutlass Tornado, a Cutlass 98.
But what about a Lincoln on that little bitty platform?
Well, one of my favorite concepts of recent memory was Freeman Thomas's C-Concept, which I was vilified relentlessly for saying I liked it, but I spent an hour with Freeman in and out and around the thing, and I loved it. But will it sell as a premium small car?
I just wonder if that's dangerous for Lincoln.
Well, my concern is exactly that. Lincoln's trying to be more legitimate as a luxury car. They're going to try to make it its own thing. Yeah. And if you start moving down market when you're trying to do that
in the positioning
or submarket,
I think Frank. It's a moot point until we have $4.50 a gallon gasoline and it stays there.
Yeah.
If we ever get there and it stays there, just like a few years ago when we had the spike, you don't need CAFE standards when you have a spike like that, because all of a sudden, the product mix changes dramatically overnight. There's the
C-Max, yeah. Or the C-Concept.
No, that's the C-Concept.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 3-across seating.
Lateral support whatsoever.
No, it was a bench. That's Freeman, okay? Freeman's like the little wind-up robot, and he just goes and hits the wall, somebody grabs him and turns him, and then suddenly the idea comes out. But
yeah, there's nothing wrong with a bench seat, actually. I mean, if you're not really interested in G's,
Which maybe the Lincoln buyer has given up on.
But that's the point. They're trying to get a new Lincoln buyer.
Yeah.
I love the car, the idea of it. I didn't like the execution, but it's a subjective thing. The problem is
a little too French in the back.
They keep trying to. Well, you want to talk about French in the back? The Juke is more Renault than Renault.
Absolutely.
When you start looking at what they're going to try to do with Lincoln, they have one vehicle that's sort of an indication of what they have to do in the future. The Flex and the MKT are the same platform.
Yeah, but not the MKT.
Wait a minute. No common surfaces at all, even different front A-pillars and windshields. Mm-hmm. They are. I mean, they have to have that kind of differentiation.
Old top hat, new.
Yeah, for Lincolns to separate them out.
Well, I think they're doing that.
They are, but my point is that they have to do that. So if you start with a car like the size of a C car, and you're going to try to do that, and you want to give it the look of what you're doing with larger cars, you're going to find yourself tailoring the Dwarf.
I know, but I don't think we have to worry about it for a while, unless we have $5 a gallon gasoline.
But you can do $5 a gallon gas without having to do cars that much smaller. I mean, did everybody see they finally released the sticker numbers, the label numbers for the Cruise Eco today?
42.
Okay. You know, I just drove a Cruise for a week, and I was very impressed with the car. It's not my favorite to look at, but I thought they did
it. You know, I've heard that from a couple of different people, and they were looking at a compact car. They were like, well, I was going to wait for the Focus to come. But, you know, that's really a little too edgy for me. And I kind of like the Cruise.
There's room for both of them because they really do punch two entirely different buttons.
Yeah, there is room for both. And I think they're both going to be successful. I think the Focus, once it hits the road, though, I think people are going to really like that.
Yeah, but the wild card in that little segment there is Jetta, which for less money is just a heck of a lot more car.
Yeah, no, it's not. The car you get for less money is not a heck of a lot more car.
It has a crappy engine, an 8-valve engine.
See, we're starting with a bad engine.
I drove next to one, and it's so blandastic, I couldn't even. It was unbelievable. It's just like that.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people in that market are not interested in all that car guy stuff. They're just like, look how long and big my back seat is.
Higher the volume, the more bland cars become. They do. Because one of the ways, when the car becomes bland, it doesn't make a bold statement. People can sort of project on it what they want, or they get it because it doesn't make a styling statement.
Yeah.
Well, Volkswagen made a clear statement here. They moved the Jetta down. They made it bland. They're going for volume. Then they've got the car coming in Tennessee. And, boy, that better not be as bland as the Jetta.
It is. It will be.
Oh, God.
See, the concern I have about it is that they're taking their core product equity and diluting. I mean, first of all, bear in mind that a lot of what the Jetta is to make room for the MMS. They're artificially sort of configured.
No, I understand that, but I think Volkswagen is going to end up doing what Toyota did. They're going to just, we want to be the biggest automotive group in the world.
So we're going to make everything as generic as possible.
And it's the
nobody's offended.
Scorched earth policy in the U.S. market. Right. We're going to blantastic our product
and
line.
That's what I'm saying is that they take the Jetta, which is their highest volume product. They get it so a traditional Jetta buyer has to look really deep inside himself to say, that's the kind of car I want. And they lose some of those buyers. They bring out the midsize car, which should be a pretty good car, but you've got a vehicle. And let's stop and think about it. I want to buy a midsize car. Okay, what do I want? And at the top of the list, you start hearing Toyota, Chevy, Honda, Ford, so on. Where's Volkswagen? It isn't on the list. So they have to somehow put this on some people's list. At the same time, a traditional Volkswagen buyer may look at it and say, no, if I wanted a Camry, I'd get a Camry. They lose both buyers short term.
I know. I get why they're doing it. I just think it's flawed. I really do. But,
Peter, if they're willing to basically throw a life cycle of the vehicle away to get it out there and just build it and then do the second vehicle making it better, it might pay off. But this is a 7 to 10 year commitment they have to do. And the question is if they're going to be in it that long throwing money at the vehicle.
Hey, Ben, make a note. We'll revisit this discussion in 2017.
Yeah.
On Autoline After Hours. we'll gather the same crew. What did you say back then? Yeah, you're full of it. Okay.
Blue wagon.
Let's see, what else can we talk about? Let's see. Does anybody care about Indy? I do, but we won't dwell on it. You know, GM's going back to Indy, and the announcements tomorrow, I'm going to go down. That should be cool.
Yep. Because, I mean, when Indy turned into a spec race.
Oh, I'll tell you what, this announcement's saving IndyCar.
I know.
They needed a second manufacturer. Now there's rumors of two more that might come in because GM jumped in.
Is it still finite chassis, though?
Well, 2012.
Right, but you see what I mean. They need to have multiple chassis, multiple engine. It can be far more intriguing.
I think Randy Bernard of IndyCar's learned that, so we'll see what happens in 2015.
Yeah.
It's a step. What else do you guys want to talk about? We can't talk about the cruise ship anymore.
No, no.
We talked about the cruise ship earlier, and boy, was it... we're not talking about the IPO.
Oh, no, that's on the list.
Oh, all right.
I was waiting. You know, I wish GM the best with the IPO, but you know what? As Jim mentioned earlier, GM got into trouble because of their financial department ruling the roost and running the product into the ground.
Because it was financial that did it. In a 21st century company, your financial group are the people that should facilitate the vision of the designers, the development of the engineers, the ability to build cars at high quality and so on. They're facilitators to make the money happen so you do this. And at General Motors, the financial guys were sustaining their own department by cutting everything.
Well,
you know, and you can say their cars got bad. Their cars got bad because the financial people didn't allow them to do good cars.
That wasn't the case in GM's heyday.
No, absolutely not.
In GM's heyday, financial guys were there to make sure they had all the resources.
Right.
They counted money.
The classic example, which we've beaten to death before, but it's worth mentioning, you know, the Pontiac GTO couldn't exist under GM corporate policy because the engine was too big.
For
what they call a mid-sized car. And I'll tell you what, if you walk next to a GTO today...
It ain't mid-sized.
You know, you just got to laugh. That was a mid-sized car. Okay. But so they get around it and they do an option. And what happens? They sell the hell out of them. What does finance do? You know, well, first of all, Chevy runs and complains like little schoolgirls to the 14th floor. So, you know, they can't do that. You know,
that engine's too big.
Yeah. And then the financial guys, you know, they look at the numbers, then they just sort of turn away. Say, whatever.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yep.
Well, this IPO thing now, okay, I'm an engineer. A lot of that number stuff on the money side goes over my head. But I thought they were going to, like, maybe try and sneak that thing in before the election so they could say, oh, see here, now the election's passed. What's the big hurry? Why not just wait to have that till, you know, the stock price might be a little higher?
Well, the reason they have to do it is because GM absolutely is so desperate to get out from under this taint of being Government Motors.
And
they
and,
feel they can't function.
Well, there's another reason, too. They have to get the federal ownership under 50%, and it opens up what they can do as far as chasing new people down. It opens the salary caps change and so on. So this is about operating it more as an independent business and being competitive and getting some more people that they
need. So wouldn't it be a good idea to get under 52% and then don't try and dump all of the stock? Because wouldn't it be nice if some of it sold in such a way that the taxpayer came out ahead? Wouldn't that be great to look back and say, hey, not only did we save a zillion jobs, but... You know, you got your money.
Frank, when you look at the IPO and you do the math, it won't be paying off the whole thing. It won't. It won't.
Yeah.
You can't pay off the whole thing. The problem you've got now...
What's it going to be, like 30%?
No, it takes... Yeah, let me see here. Depending upon how they split it, if they split it, and the nature of the split, because there's this thing about a split after you issue, it looks like they take them down to somewhere in the 40s. But it depends on how much they can sell and what the price is. Remember, the target price is between $26 and $29. One of the problems is there have been more IPOs chasing down. There's not enough money to cover the IPOs that have been out there in a lot of cases. Some companies have canceled IPOs. But for GM, they have got to do this thing where they take the government share down below a half so they can. It opens up a lot of stuff they can do that they need to do.
Well, they're desperate. They have to do something because it's all connected to their image, and they absolutely need to do something. Let's change the subject. That's financial stuff's crazy.
Yeah, but it's magic.
I know. What about the LA Auto Show? Is everybody going? Or
I got a whole office out there.
That's right. They're sort of headquartered there. They can sort of go there in their
sleep.
I
will never see the LA Auto Show.
You have no idea what a tremendous fete of automotive technology that you're...
Just like I have never seen SEMA.
There's no excuse for that.
Yeah.
I mean, because at SEMA, my favorite thing was when you would go and see Mr. Cho's wheel. And there would be this one wheel that every wheel manufacturer had that's made by Mr. Cho in the old special economic zone, where he's building these wheels and just giving them to everyone. And, they're probably made out of recycled soda cans or something. But the wheel was everywhere. And the names that each of the wheel manufacturers would give the same wheel, and you're going like, Mr. Cho's wheel, Mr. Cho's wheel.
I didn't go to SEMA this year, but I've been once, and it's an awesome show.
It's every car enthusiast, if you can wangle a credential, should go.
I heard Ford had a lot of great stuff at SEMA this year.
Ford had a lot of great stuff. GM had great stuff.
They had the Spark Z-Spec.
Or what was it?
Z-Spec.
The Volt Z-Spec.
The Volt Z-Spec and the Spark.
Yeah.
You know, that's disturbing to me. They
should call it Sparky.
No argument. Absolutely.
Sparky.
Now, what did they do to the Volt? Put real tires on it?
It was real tires, a body kit. It was cosmetic. The whole thing for the Z-Spec stuff looks like
it's
cosmetic.
An 8-liter Chevy big block in the back seat.
Charging the, yeah.
With the gear shift sticking out of the roof in honor of Ed the, Big Dead.
The electric spark will be the Spark E.
Yeah.
So that'll satisfy.
That's good. I like that.
Whoa.
What about the LA show? Okay, let's see. Fisker announced that they're going to show the first production Karma at the LA Auto Show.
Well, good. That's good. They should. And then they should sell it.
No, I was watching the CNBC thing about Ford, and they showed all the ritual you do in India when you get a car. There's all kinds of stuff.
And the dealer's doing this for the customer.
Right, right. So
I'm
envisioning Fisker will do that when you buy a Karma. Wouldn't that be special?
It would be appropriate.
Yes, it would.
The thing that disturbed me, though, is they put lemons under the wheel of your car
as you drive off. Because that's for good luck.
Yeah, but somehow in the States, if you did that with a lemon, it connotes all the wrong stuff, okay?
Well, yeah, and then pity the poor lot guy. So, okay, we got some more lemons you got to clean. I was just like, really?
I was thinking tomatoes would be more interesting than lemons.
Well, we have reached critical mass here, and I'm going to, since I'm hosting the show and John's nowhere to be found, Ben, we're going to go to rapid fire now.
Yep.
Except I don't have any questions, Ben.
Okay. Oh, he's probably still typing the questions, isn't he?
No, it's on an iPad. Anyway, yeah, the opening of Conan was awesome. And just when he thinks he's got it knocked, the Tommy gun guys come out of the woods again. Thank you, Ben.
The auto line.
We got anything good?
Oh, I think so. Lots of good stuff. It's always good.
Phone call about two-door cars, phone call about electric doors, phone call from Youngblood with report from SEMA, phone call about why Suzuki is still around. We don't care. Phone call about whether GM will repeat previous engine mistakes. Probably not. Phone call about Cadillac in Europe.
I understand. I heard one of the things GM was looking at, though, was a pushrod non-crossflow version of the Ecotec engine.
First question for Mr. Hall from Bubba. Being part of A123 and the electrification movement, are there any upcoming battery storage breakthroughs that will bring battery storage into the 21st century?
I worked on an electric vehicle program, and I learned there are three kinds of liars in the world. There are liars, there are damned liars, and there are battery engineers. The batteries are about chemistry, and sometimes there's a breakthrough, and sometimes there isn't. In 1989, there was this new battery technology that had a lot of merit, lithium polymer for automotive application. We still don't have lithium polymer automotive batteries. You know, in fact, that device you're holding, I think, has a lithium polymer battery in it, and it's one of only a few consumer goods that are commercialized. If you think about it this way, the battery is effectively a gas tank. And the storage density of chemistry is lower than just taking these volatile elements and keeping them in semi-liquid form and run them in there. The next breakthrough for batteries could happen tomorrow or it could happen 15 years from now. That's the problem.
Okay, we're done with that.
Okay.
Never mind. George from Brooklyn, what do the guys think about the South Korea trade deal thingy? Well, needless to say, the U.S. is getting hosed.
Yeah, and it didn't go down, right?
And they're, you know, meeting halfway isn't good enough.
Right.
Korea's going to have to go to like 98% to meet halfway.
And that's unlikely to happen.
Yeah, so we don't know.
That's one of the issues. Well,
what's the market in Korea? I mean,
it's
if it was wide open, how many cars would we sell there?
Oh, if it were wide open?
Yeah.
No. It's not a bad market, but we're probably talking about a combination annual sales of Texas, Illinois, and New York.
Yeah.
You're not even at California levels. So it's a small market.
Yeah.
You know.
So.
And right now, let me tell you, foreign high-end cars are so insanely expensive. There was a time when they had 110% duty on things like S-Classes. So when you saw an S-Class, it was like, whoa.
I was kind of glad, though, to see that I think Chrysler and Ford had some ads about that, right? Sticking up for a little bit of rights here, going, hey, you know, we're getting hosed on this deal.
Yep. Yeah.
You know?
Basically, GM has production there because of GM DAT. So.
All right, Jason, oh, boy. DZIADOSC, Ziados. Jason, I apologize if I screwed it up. My dad was wanting to boss Stang Saturday, saw the colors and red wheels and said, yuck. Any knowledge of how colors are selected? The Boss Mustang will be available in other colors, I think. So yeah. Don't.
In fact, I think it's only the track one that has that red.
Yeah. Don't get torqued up.
Yeah, the Laguna. That's the Laguna Seca.
Yeah.
Which is the one I'd want, but
yeah.
not.
Jason, tell your dad you can get a Boss Mustang in plenty of colors in the spring. It's only the track version where you get into yuck territory.
Although there are two keys with that. There's a black key and a red key.
Yeah. No, it's a white key and a red key. The track key.
Track key's red.
Red. Yeah. I think. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
By the way, they announced Mustang. You can get a secret, double secret track key, and it adjusts everything, 200 different things, and makes your Mustang go crazy, which is a great idea.
It's like my key, but different.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I never dug into that, but how much latitude was there? I mean, it still has to be street legal, right? Are they saying, oh no,
no, no, it, no, it's
it goes full rich now and whatever because you're obviously on the track.
Changing things like throttle response time and so on. So that thing just makes it edgier. You know, it's the same like thing as the M button on an M5 or an M3.
Okay, comment from Jeff W. Who would choose a Regal Turbo versus a Sonata Turbo? Still considering the Regal Turbo costs a few grand more. I'd go with the Regal because it's more of a performance package than the Sonata Turbo. Sonata Turbo functions like a V6.
Yeah, that's it. They've even positioned it like that.
It's a tighter, nimbler package, too.
But in a way, that's sort of what they've done with the Regal Turbo if you had an automatic in it. That's separate from the GS, because the GS is the one that intrigues me. Because there's a turbo in the...
I get it.
Yeah. CXL,
but the way they've done the Sonata Turbo, I would go...
It is. It's a V6 alternative, yeah.
George from Brooklyn, would you drive a Chrysler 200 over a Buick Regal? No. Let's go on. I'm not going to throw that to the group. Will the Prius comment from Volt 230? Will the Prius minivan sell well here? I don't know. In certain enclaves of the country, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just have to say, what Prius minivan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those vehicles they may not drop over here.
And minivans in general are kind of interesting just because there was a little bit of a comeback, but now it just seems to be flat on their sales. And
well, but part of it is that there are alternatives to minivans that didn't used to exist.
Right.
Some crossovers are viable minivan alternatives. And then when the C-Max gets here, that's going to siphon off some more buyers or actually keep them from going into minivans more accurately.
Comment from Tim. What do you guys think of a Maserati SUV based on the Grand Cherokee Next M-Class platform?
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I know it's not a bad idea. Do I like it? No.
The world has been fairly crying out for La Forza for how many decades?
Yeah, but you got to understand, this started as the Alfa Romeo, what was it called, X over N, which was the large crossover they showed as a concept car called the Kamal. And what happens with the Alfa project now sort of on hold, it makes sense to do it as a Mazer.
I love it. I think it's a great idea.
Okay. You got to understand, when you see the car, there's nothing that looks like it's a Grand Cherokee. It's all new rockers up, so...
Joseph wants to know, guys, the total stock market capitalization of Ford stock is only half as much as the total of all Toyota stock, yet Ford now makes more money than Toyota. How can this be? My only theory is that Toyota has some major footholds in the third world that make its future look brighter. Any other explanations?
Easy one. Ford's a family-controlled business. The street hates family-controlled businesses and has historically. You look at Ford's valuation after the original IPO in the mid-50s, their stock's always been down because the street can't do with it what it can do with a normal stock.
Okay, there's your answer. We're moving on. Rumblestrip wants to know, and Michelle wants to know, is Peter going to have AutoExtremist.com sponsorship on a Chevy-powered Indy car? If you see AutoExtremist.com sponsorship on an Indy car, then you know I won the mega game. Until that time, it's just a dream. Mud Monster wants to know, Scott, can you run over to my house because I'm hungry?
Oh, he saw the burgers. The burgers are getting funky.
Yeah, you don't want those.
Devin Rowe wants to know, Jim, have you heard any updates on the Chevy Performance sedan you mentioned in an earlier episode? Yes.
Yeah, it's still underway. It's got some stuff for production, but they're still working on it.
Phil wants to know, Peter, what did you think of the Duramax and Allison ads from GM? Quite frankly, I found them to be pathetic. I do not like them at all. Have you seen them?
Total waste of Patrick Warburton.
Yeah. Jim Haynes says, now as we hear Chevy going back to Indy, I can't help but think how cool it would be for Chevy-powered IndyCar to win the 100th running of the 500 in a few years as a bookend of the Chevrolet Brothers racing in many 500s, starting with the first. Could it make us any more proud of our beloved Bowtie brand? Well, the problem is that Chevy's coming to Indy in 2012, and the 100th anniversary of the race is 2011.
Close, but no cigar.
Yeah. Jeff W. from Albany, New York, a regular and faithful watcher, and I think reads Auto Extremist too. Should Chrysler consider euthanizing the Chrysler brand and put its full focus into making Dodge and Jeep as competitive as possible?
No. It's more money. Chrysler's a higher location. You can. Yeah. The new 300, where do you see that?
New 300, I saw one in the tin, actually, by Auburn Hills. It was not camoed.
And
it,
you can't
it,
charge.
It was pretty impressive.
That kind of money for a Dodge, yeah.
Tim and Indy, this is good. Did Suzuki reduce its U.S. operations to a post office box? But I'm dumb. Hey, try the roast beef. It's really good tonight. Tim, that's a good one. I like that. You know what, Ben? Let's do a phone call, and then I'll continue our death march.
Hi, my name is Kevin McMaster from Fargo, North Dakota. I think it's fine that General Motors doesn't have to pay taxes for the next year, 10 years. It might get them kind of on track with the especially Asian brands that have come over here and gotten all the tax breaks and incentives that they've got. Thanks.
Thanks. Ben, let's have the next call.
Wow. GM's not paying taxes?
I don't know where that came from.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. I recently read that Cadillac is going to relaunch the Cadillac brand in Europe yet again. My question for the panel is, do you think this is a good move at this time, or do you think it would be better to focus effort in expanding Cadillac into less established markets, where Cadillac may have a better chance, and then reapproach Europe at a later time? Thanks.
At first, you don't succeed. Try again.
Well, but this will be try number three. The problem with CAD is to do it in Europe, they've got to have a serious long-term commitment to it. And I mean long-term. They've got to assume a decade to two decades. And when they did this last one, it was pretty obvious they wanted somebody else to do it. Kreumans was involved, another company was handling the dealer network. If they're willing to commit to it for two decades, and I mean commit, they could make it work. But if they're not, it's going to be the same fits and starts all over again.
How are their diesels? Do they have a big car, a decent big car? Do they have a decent small car? You know.
Bear in mind, though, with diesels in Europe, diesel penetration is going down except in high-end luxury cars. So you'd still need it there, but I'm talking about high-end luxury cars. The diesel penetration is dropping in even things like 3 Series. So,
Ben, let's do the phone call from Youngblood with the report from SEMA.
Captain DiLorenzo and friends. Good to see you. All in the same group.
Youngblood from Cleveland.
Hey, last week I went to the SEMA show. I got a report that I think the big three have got their mojo together. I mean, it was just the basic cars are here now, just like they were in the 60s. GM's got that track Camaro and the track Corvette. Excellent starting points for somebody that wants to go to the next step. Ford had that Laguna Seca Mustang. It was just outstanding. They had it like in a black light. Very good stuff. And then even the Challenger had that drag car. Good stuff to start out with. You know, it gives us a chance to buy something and then personalize it in the way that we want it to, just like all the tuners are doing. But I think the 60s are back. Good times.
Let's just hope it doesn't include Vietnam.
Stay the course. Keep it halfway sober. Later. This is Youngblood, Cleveland, Ohio.
Thanks, Youngblood.
Cool.
If you need affirmation of the enthusiast movement for cars, go to SEMA.
Yeah.
If you go to SEMA, you aren't depressed anymore about all the bad stuff.
And there was some psychotic stuff there. They were like hotted up Honda CRZs. So these are like
Honda had a
hyper performance hybrids, but there were a lot of
did they pull all that electric crap out?
No, they kept it in there. You know, and some of the guys are like rewinding motors. So I guess I don't know.
But one, and we showed the one on the site. Bands. They had a bright red CRZ. It had 200 horsepower.
Yeah, that was the factory performance car they did. It's very impressive.
Very, very nice.
So then it gets Civic Si gas mileage.
Probably a little better. Or far worse, one of the two.
You know that a lot of the stuff that's used for environmental concerns and better gas mileage and all those things, a lot of the greenies just don't realize this is the stuff that tuners are dying for. Mm-hmm. You're talking about turbos. You're talking about all kinds. Electric is instant torque.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody overlooks the fact that these cars are going to be able to go faster
and burn more fuel in the future than anything that we have out there today.
We're out of gas.
Well, we'll find what corn. We'll burn corn or
hamburgers.
Hamburgers.
George in Ohio, can Peter tell viewers anything new about the next Corvette? I read today in the latest Motor Trend magazine that GM has picked the body style to be used for the 2013-14 Corvette. I would love to hear about the special car, Frank.
I'd have to kill him if I told him any more than we put in there already.
Yes, they have picked the body.
It is spectacular.
Yes. Generally, same size car, slightly small. I mean, fractionally small.
You'll be tough to find it.
Yeah, you'd be tough to tell. Somewhat lighter, cooler, hotter, better.
Not mid-engine.
Thank God. Is it the big leap that I'm hoping for? No, but you know they'll keep us.
It'll be a great car.
And will they fix up the interior to where nobody can fool around giving a crap about that anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's money in the interior, which is what it needed the last go-around. But there's serious money back in the interior. It's car spectacular.
JDP Shooter, could you please explain how the EPA obtained its current regulatory powers where they can now change tailpipe emission standards at the drop of a hat with no oversight, and how this affects what business could do in this country? Follow-up, will the new Republican Congress be able to change the EPA's power?
No, probably not.
This is just...
And this new talk of new emission standards, that's not that they can change it. Those are proposals. They'll have to be approved ultimately by Capitol Hill.
Yeah, because the big push now is the 60 MPG.
65.
Yeah, just how will specialty manufacturers pass the 2016 CAFE rules? I don't know.
May have gone up from devaluation of a dollar.
I'd be happy if I knew what the window sticker is going to read on a Volt.
Well, that's one of the problems I got, because the sticker for everything changes in 2012. The window, the label information is going to change drastically in 12.
Right.
And here's GM trying to figure out, do you know what you're going to do for 2012? And EPA doesn't yet.
What are the two numbers? I don't care how you paint them on the sticker.
Except you have to understand, because of the situation there, and they may end up having a radically different number come 2012 for the Volt.
Yeah.
And which means they might have to launch the bloody car again from a fuel economy standpoint as far as in the market. It's the whole situation with labels and EPA is a mess. And yeah, there's the MPGE number, MPG equivalents.
But that's a not true number.
The EPA number is not a true number. It's done off a dynamometer test simulating a route that was run in Los Angeles that it is physically impossible to drive today at the speeds the original test was done at. You can't do the test.
Well, the numbers you see today are, everybody knows that it's an approximation, and it's, they're not bad.
And it's off by this much on regular gasoline cars. It'll be off by,
yeah.
I mean, your mileage will vary from 35 to 1,400. If you never plug a Volt in, you get 35. If you never turn on the gas engine, it's 1,400. Because it'll burn a tank in a year.
Right.
So you would have to, if you drove 40 miles exactly every day,
and never got the gas engine running.
And never turned the gas engine on. That's the range you're
so what happens to the fuel, though? Don't you have to put something?
No, the engine turns on every 2 months, so you burn the nine gallons in the year.
So over a year, it'll basically burn up the whole tank.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's called fuel conditioning.
All right. Ben, do we have another phone call?
Because if not, the fuel would turn into, like, varnish in the tank.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Tom from Indiana. I've got a question. Do you think Chevrolet will make the same stupid mistakes with the new Chevy motor they did in the late 80s? As you remember, if you wanted a Chevy V8, you had to get special permission from Roger Penske to get a motor, which was your competition. Penske was one of the directors of Ilmor Engineering in England at the time.
Indy Engine.
They were the ones that built the motor. If you did get a Chevy V8, you were not allowed to get inside the motor, only adjustments on the outside. I just think poor old Tony Holman has done backflips in his grave over the dumb things done at the 500 track over the years. Guys, keep up the good work. Thank you.
The sealed engine's a good question. It won't be done the same way because do you know who's working on the engine, who's doing the work on it?
Well, Ilmor does a Honda.
I know that.
But we will find out tomorrow whether GM's going with Cosworth or they've booted, you know, Honda out of Ilmor or whatever. But, you know, it's an interesting point. when they first started leasing those engines, they rightfully said, you know, no, you can't go in them because, you know, you're paying a lease price and we'll take care of them. And, you know, will the Speedway ever get back to where people unloaded their creations every May?
Probably not.
Probably not. But
Do you know, is the Honda engine a totally sealed engine, or do the guys get to tweak it themselves?
There's a couple rebuilders for it. No, there really isn't. No, it's Ilmor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they get to tweak them at all. I have to check that. Ben, do we have one more phone call?
This is Os Rutherford from Greenville, South Carolina. And just referring you to your statement last time about Suzuki not leaving the United States, could it possibly be because Volkswagen now owns 20% of it, and you know how Volkswagen wants to have monstrous sales in the United States somehow? But anyway, that's my comment. Bye.
Didn't I read where the head of Suzuki basically dissed the U.S. market, say we're there, but we really don't care about it?
He did diss the market. I don't think they're here because of Volkswagen. I really don't.
No, they're not.
One of the reasons they've been here is the same reason Mitsu's here. There are interesting tax breaks you get for subsidiary operations overseas that lose money, actually. And that's one of the reasons Mitsu's stayed at the depth it has with the plant. You know, plant in normal is not building enough vehicles to justify its existence, in my mind. But they actually have a tremendous tax benefit from doing that.
How crazy are their profits in Japan that year after year after year they need this kind of enormous write-off over here? I mean, every day I expect to wake up and go, they finally told everyone to clean out their desk and go home.
It's a tax deferral against whatever you might pay, regardless of how successful you are.
So they're incredibly optimistic about future profits?
I don't know.
All right, Ben, we've got two more calls. Let's get to them.
Yes, this is Mike Mason. I sell Chevrolets and Cadillacs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The new cars have such large doors. Wouldn't it be a good idea to put some kind of electric device that would bring the door closed a little bit, then you can reach out and grab it and bring it in? That would be a good idea on Cadillac.
Oh, he's talking about...
So you could have a motor to bring it closer to then pull it closed, which in a way is the opposite of the German doors, where you bring the door closed and it closes it up with a...
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but the new cars, if you open the door a little bit, you have to lean out of the car to pull the thing, and that's what he's commenting about.
It's not a bad idea.
No,
Rolls-Royce, you know, the drop-head coupes, I think you press the button and they motor all the way to the
top. Oh, that's right.
Oh, and by the way, if you do see Auto Extremists on an Indy car, you will see me driving to the track in a Rolls-Royce Ghost.
Okay. You're not going to spring for the Phantom?
A Phantom Coupe would be more you.
Yeah, I think so.
Phantom Coupe.
That's pretty cool.
Phantom Coupe's got lots of presence. It's one of those cars you see.
I wonder if the back door is growing up even wider and wider. Is baby seats, things like that you have to put in the back seat.
Could be.
And it's easier to do.
It's not a bad idea in a luxury car to bring him, you know.
Hey, Ben, can we do the last call?
Sit down. Comes in a little closer.
Let the driver.
Yeah, this is Bertram in Wisconsin. I was wondering why there's no apparent American market at all for two doors except for pony cars. Even the European models, I mean, there's no one Ford as far as Americans go. We don't get the Fiesta three-door. We don't get the Focus three-door. And can Frank Marcus help me out on this? Isn't there still a demand? Right now it might only be in the used car market for a two-door.
GTI, STI.
Yeah, I mean, there are. I think so. You know, it's a personal thing. I don't know if people in bad economies feel like they got to have one car that covers every possible base, and I might want to put someone in the back seat every once in a while or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, there are more two doors than... Well,
for cars where they offer both, GTI is a good example.
Yeah.
Since they added the four-door, the percent of the four-door has just gotten to the point where it's superseded now the two-door. You know, and it's just convenience. I understand, because I prefer two doors in a lot of vehicles, but they just don't. The four door version, if there's a four door version, it seems
like years ago, four door Mustangs and four door Camaros, those would outsell the two door.
Years ago, I proposed, and it achieved a little bit of traction at Chrysler when they were doing the Neon, because I said, look, this is a Dodge. You got to have something that differentiates it from the Hondas and Toyotas. I said, give me the two door closure panel on the driver's side, nice big door, easy to get in, throw your stuff in the back seat. Give me the four-door closure on the passenger side, kids getting out on the curb.
So three-door.
Yeah, three-door, no hatch. It didn't go.
Hmm. Well, you know, kids, it's about that time.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, the campfire's getting a little low. Only but free
I'll be far.
Hamburgers.
They're cooled down now.
We're running out of tequila.
30 seconds in a microwave.
Funky on the lettuce.
Want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. You can follow Frank's work at MotorTrend.com. You can read Scott's stuff at DetNews.com and at Twitter.com/AutoCritic.
Where I tweeted my root canal live on Monday.
Did anyone really? Care?
Mahalo for that. Holy.
I had a bunch of people say, please shut up. Please stop.
And Jim Hawes, of course, is at 2953 Analytics, the man who knew too much on a solar system, coming to you shortly. And you can visit my website at autoextremist.com if you're really bored, or follow me at twitter.com/autoextremist, where I will be tweeting feverishly from Indianapolis tomorrow morning.
Yes.
You can follow Autoline on Twitter at twitter.com/Autoline. And don't forget, you can also friend Autoline on Facebook to get all kinds of content throughout the week. You can find our page at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. And don't forget, it's going to be a big show from L.A. John's going to be live all the time next week. We're going to do Autoline After Hours next week, live from California, and it'll be cool. So thanks to everyone out there. We'll see you down the road of fair peace.
When life has gone.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Did you guys sit down there, like, right now?
Visit our website, OuterLineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Outerline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Outerline Detroit. That's all there and much more at OuterLineDetroit.tv.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.